Coming up, author, comedian, actor, musician, Wayne Fetterman joins Ileana in just a minute.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
And now, it's the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast, starring Ileana Douglas. Eavesdrop with Ileana as she interviews Hollywood's most prominent players about filmmaking, acting, and what really happens on the set of your favorite flicks and TV shows.
Hello, it's Ileana Douglas. Welcome to the I Blame Dennis Hopper podcast. I'm here with my lovely co-host, Tamara Berg. How are you?
No, you're lovely.
Thank you. We get along very well. It's funny.
I like it.
No cat fighting.
No,
yet.
No, not yet. But as not I said yet. Earlier, I'm going to be like raiding your wardrobe one of these days.
You can raid it. As long as I'm not in it. Ha ha.
You do have a million of them, don't you? All right. So we were talking earlier about how filmmaking and TV is a collaborative process, right?
Yes.
I mean, there are all these entities involved. So have you had experiences where your vision doesn't match the vision of other people who are in power? I mean, so like, for example, I tend to be a bit of a dictator on my projects. So I write them, I produce them, I, you know, appear in them. So there's not much arguing going on, frankly, because I get to decide. Except with myself, exactly. But that was John, our producer on the couch, who's joining in with us sometimes on occasion. So, everybody goes through your own projects in school where you have small groups and things like that, and the conflicts come up. How has that manifested for you?
I think it's very challenging. I was spoiled early on in my career by doing, improv comedy, which is extremely collaborative.
Yes.
And then my first few jobs were working for Martin Scorsese. And again, everything was extremely collaborative.
Mm-hmm.
And he, obviously you knew he was in charge, but he was very willing to take suggestions or ideas. And, he'd say, that's a great idea. No, I think we had it, but it was very,
But he'd consider them.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Everything was very open. Listen, the first time I worked for him, which was the looping of The Last Temptation of Christ,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about movies, and I came in, and it was, working behind the scenes. So I literally didn't know what I was doing. So I would just suggest, hey, have you read this book? And so I was very spoiled by then after. Oh, and then also I followed up working with Scorsese with Gus Van Sant. Again, very collaborative experience.
To die for, right?
And then, the next 10 films in a row, I would be like, no, thank you, please. Could you, Ileana, please, can you just sit there? Please shut up.
Do your job.
Please shut up. And so I found it very jarring. So I had to kind of maneuver between what I wanted and, how to please myself and how to also please the director. And sometimes it's very challenging because a movie is like an amoeba, it can start to change on you in the middle of shooting it. If it starts to go, sometimes, especially the studio films I've worked on, where the first week of dailies comes back and everybody suddenly is freaking out.
Right.
And it's all about your hair. If we get our hair right, this is going to be a hit film. And especially in a couple of the films where I was playing supporting gal pals, the movies started to go through just huge changes and, where I found myself not, how do I support this film
in a way. You go in having to, quite a bit of character work before you enter into any project.
Yes.
And I know that from reading the book. I Blame Dennis Hopper.
Thank you.
Available on Amazon.
Available now.
Also available now in paperback. So
yes,
definitely buy it. But so have you ever had experiences where those, like, your work is laid out and you're so clear on your vision and then it gets turned like that by studio notes how does that go for you?
Again, it's one of the most challenging things because there was a period of time in making movies, the 90s and independent film, where a movie schedule was about 6 weeks. Now we shoot movies in 20 days. You know, there's no rehearsal. There's no time to talk about collaboration. And so what happens, the biggest challenge currently, what I find personally, both as a producer, director, and as an actress, is that there is not enough time, and therefore the technical aspects win out, because you literally just have a certain amount of time to light the scene and do the scene. And so the crew is, lighting and tinkering and making sure you actually can be seen and can be heard. And, you have absolutely no time to work on the emotional internal aspects. And so sometimes you can literally be in the middle of a scene and a director is saying, what are you doing? Like, this is a comedy, And so you have to have that agreement beforehand of what kind of a film are you doing? What is the tone? That's what I always want to know. What is the tone of this film? What can I bring to it? I want to bring something different. And I'm extremely involved in terms of what's my hair going to look like? What are my clothes going to look like? What does the set look like? How do I fit into this, to the story? What can I bring to this that's different? And again, that sometimes is jarring for people because the director hasn't even thought about it. They're so jammed into how quickly can we shoot this thing that you're sometimes, again, you're finding yourself on the set walking on, why is she in a green sweater? What the hell? What is going on here? And you don't even have the time, or the luxury to talk about the emotional aspects. And I've had directors call me after watching something in the editing room and say, wow, I see what you're trying to do there. And so, the collaboration, days and the fighting days are over, back in the day of making movies. Yeah, I would strenuously argue my point, especially if I was writing the script. I mean, I would fight over every, little detail in the script. And then as you get older, you just find, it's the phrase, of course, pick your battles becomes, much, much more important. But it's definitely a challenge because you don't want to go in there completely giving up.
Right.
You want to collaborate, but you want support. You don't, I've certainly heard about stories. I've watched movies. I'll give you an example of a movie. I can't think of the title, but what's the movie that Brian De Palma did with Sean Penn? The Vietnam film. Suddenly can't think of the title. Everyone out there is screaming.
Yeah, they are. It's okay.
But, apparently a week into shooting, Sean Penn wanted to do an accent. And so they stopped shooting and he went and did his accent and they came back and Casualties of War.
Got it. Great.
Cool. Film. Thank you.
Good job. I'm 3 seconds before Google. Good job.
I know. Yes.
You are much more reliable than Google, I find.
So, and that was a major decision. And so when the movie comes out, I personally find it a little bit distracting in the film, knowing that, gee, I wonder what he sounded like. I've always been fascinated, like, what did he sound like before, before the huge, accent? But accents, who you cast in the film, sometimes, that to me is like the collaboration between the actor and the director. You must really, really decide and not on a whim say, Sean wants to be blonde in this movie. And, so that's something that I'm always, as an audience member, I'm curious about. I make this joke. I go, they were in the dailies. They watched this every day for weeks. Why didn't they say anything? Like, did they think this was working? Did they make a bargain with themselves?
Right.
So sometimes when a movie comes out and it just goes horribly awry, give you another example. The movie Tarzan, and this crazy decision was made to dub the lead actress, Andy McDowell, Glenn Close. It's the most distracting. And then you see her, of course, in Groundhog Day, and she's lovely. She's a wonderful actress. And, it's kind of crazy that she was dubbed by Glenn Close. And so, you know, did it ruin the movie? But so sometimes, again, these casting choices, I think, are in terms of collaboration, you know, you're watching the person and you're in dailies. And did you not notice there was an issue?
So, again, just to talk about collaboration, have you had any experiences where you did go in with something really, you and I have also talked about criticism a lot.
Yes.
So, you know, to a certain degree, you know, we want to keep it at bay, but have you gone into a project with something really in mind and had your mind changed within the collaborative process by somebody? Or are you really pretty much stick to your vision?
I mean, I love collaboration. Yeah. Again, when somebody trusts you to come in and you say, I've done all this research. And,
I think trust is the key in there. Go ahead.
You know, that you say, Larry Karaszewski had an interesting phrase. He called it fun facts, like things you have on the side that you try to get in. And I remember working with Allison Anders because we were doing a film that was semi-autobiographical based on Carole King.
Grace of My Heart. Most wonderful films.
Based on Joni Mitchell. And there was a story that Joni Mitchell had told us that she wasn't even allowed to touch the buttons, you know, of the, even though she was writing her own songs in the mixing. Men did all the mixing and you literally couldn't even touch anything. And so we had fun facts, you know, like that. And I would say, oh, Allison, maybe we can get this in, and you know, she'd say, oh, that's great, and you know, I don't think this scene's gonna work, but you're right, that's a good idea. So I think it's having obviously respect for the director, they're the director, but you know, bringing things collaborating. And Grace of My Heart, we had a funny experience where I wanted to do a personal homage to great singers, you know, so I had a little bit of Liza in there. I had a little bit of Judy Garland, you know, Star Is Born. And I wanted to do a little homage to Barbra Streisand with the perm. And we had a scene that was in the 70s. And I was so proud of myself. I came out with the hairdresser,
very curly,
and Allison was like, "No, this is not. This is not a." I said, "What? What? Are we? I was trying to sneak you." But she caught me, and
noticed that.
Who, me?
There are a lot of details going on in directors' minds when they're doing a film.
Yes. But sometimes, you know, I've done the obstinate thing, which is, you know, something doesn't work.
Right.
And this is a classic filmmaking problem. You know a line doesn't work, but you know the director is either in love with it or is a demagogue or doesn't want it changed or whatever. And again, usually what I do is I just don't say anything, but you somehow point out the fact. You know, I wouldn't say you're tanking something deliberately, but you're kind of not trying as hard with that. And usually the director will say, you know, something about this scene is flat. And you're like, what do you think it is? You know, and, well, it's the part. And then you kind of let them come up with.
Discover.
Come up with, you know, with a change. It depends. You know, everything is, when I've worked on some television shows, it's extremely collaborative. I've joked, and, you know, when I worked on Larry Sanders, everything was being changed. The Drew Carey Show is a remarkable experience I had. I'm a huge fan of the Drew Carey Show. I wish they would show that on television. I worked on that. And extremely, I mean, my God, we would do the show and then at midnight after the audience left, Drew would do another show. He'd say, say this. The writers would come up to you, they'd have five lines. It was so exciting.
That's great.
You know, you have these fake sets, you're standing out. I was like, okay, when you come in now, do this. And then, you know, there's such a great energy of doing that. It was so exciting and so collaborative. And then sometimes you work on certain shows and that are very specific and they have a very specific tone and they're not interested in you ad-libbing or bringing anything to it. And you just realize that. you know, I know I'm, and you just, you respect that. You may not agree with it. A couple times, specifically, I've had issues in sex scenes and shooting sex scenes where people want you, well, we're talking about collaboration.
Yes, we are. It's the ultimate collaboration.
that's one of the, you know, again, it's one of the hardest things in the movie business to shoot, talk about collaboration. But you talk about you all have to be on the same page. You know, it's like okay, Friday we'll be doing this thing. And you got to really, really decide kind of before you get in there.
Yeah.
Navigating some collaboration.
On that note.
We should do a whole show on sex scenes.
I think we should bring in
our guest. I'm obsessed with sex scenes in films.
Knowing all about it.
Yes. Wayne Fetterman. Now, Mr. Fetterman.
Yes.
Come on in here.
We want you. We need you. Come in.
This is this interview is going to cut a little close to home because it's almost like a like an intervention. It's like,
here we go, kids.
Long time friend.
Long-time listener.
Uh oh.
Wayne Fetterman. Yeah, I'm going to put it in the cup.
Long-time friend. It's almost, this was like my fantasy to kind of interview, you know, set my family up and interview them in a pointed.
Love it.
I always think that's why people do those documentaries where they come home and they confront their family with a camera.
Is this it? Are we on?
We certainly are.
We're sort of vamping.
It was kind of smooth,
but
wasn't it?
I like it.
Yeah.
I like it.
We sort of slide into. Okay. I vamp.
No. I'm sorry. I messed up. I want to drink it out of the can in the cup.
Wait, oh, for God's
sake. Just give me the can. I'm totally.
Who's just going to put the can in the cup?
Yeah.
Wayne Fetterman doing
John, a little too proper.
The actual comedy.
How did you do that?
The actual comedy process is occurring right now. Thank you, Wayne, for being here.
Yep.
Now, we start our show off the same way.
Are you going to introduce me to your listeners?
We have introduced you, but I'll introduce you again.
What did you say?
Wayne Fetterman is, you know him from his numerous stand-up comedy appearances, of course.
Yeah.
His many, many supporting comedic comedy roles.
Give me some of the examples of those.
We got some.
The Larry Sanders Show,
yes.
Of course.
Right.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Even my brother recognized you from that.
Right.
Community.
When someone in my family recognizes someone, that's impressive.
Of course.
Community, Legally Blonde, of course. 50 First Dates, The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Step Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a film out now, aren't you, that's getting a lot of heat, a kind of independent film?
Called Still Punching the Clown?
Yes.
Yeah.
Do tell.
Yeah.
Well, it's just it's a comedian who it's a sequel to another movie he did. And I get to my favorite thing in the movie is I get to do a scene with J.K. Simmons.
Yes.
Nice.
Who won an Oscar.
Yes, he did.
For playing this guy Fletcher
in
Whiplash. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes.
So, but in this movie, I get to yell at him. I get to Fletcher.
Oh.
Whoa.
I know. What do you think about that?
I think that's impressive.
Tamara.
I like it.
I'm just meeting her. Just met her.
What do you think?
She seems nice.
Do you approve?
Seems nice. Oh, she's taking a picture.
Yes.
I thought we were just going to be talking. I didn't know this was
going to
be.
Oh, you look so good. We got to catch up.
Thank you.
Now, I want to.
Let's start with the first question.
But we're going to get to supporting roles in movies.
Yeah.
Definitely. We're going to talk about music and movies.
Yes.
But I want to start talking. We always start because I think.
Every time.
It's a great.
You always start with
a frame of reference.
Yeah.
What was the first?
Because
I'm obsessed with this, as everyone knows. The first
sex
film,
scene you did. No, wait. No, that was earlier.
No, that was our
the
opening
first
topic.
Film I ever saw
first
in the movie
film
theater.
You ever saw in a movie theater. It could be on television too.
Oh.
But the first movie you saw in a movie theater. Who took you to it? What were the circumstances?
Well, these are all great. This is all very interesting. the movie is a movie, as with most people. That I found out this fact was a Disney movie made by the Disney people. And it was a live action movie called In Search of the Castaways. I'm sure you've never heard of it.
I have
not. How about you?
I have not.
How about you, film buff people? I don't know what camera I'm on.
We should keep a list of everyone's film because they're so great.
In Search of the Castaways, which was with starring Haley Mills.
Yes.
And What's the guy's name? Oh, now I'm going to blank on the guy's name. He was James Mason. Do you remember? James Mason.
Love James Mason.
Yeah, that great voice.
I once followed him.
Okay. That's weird. Can we cut that out?
Nope.
What happens?
Nope. You almost got a spit take, though, which was fantastic. That would be our first spit take.
Follow him like you saw him driving down the street.
My roommate and I, Steven, were like, oh my God, it's James Mason. Let's follow him. I mean, we were in New York. We were unemployed. We had nothing to do, and we followed him.
How good is he in A Star Is Born? Have you ever seen that movie?
It's been a long time.
Long time. I'm not talking about the Barbara Streisand one.
I know.
One of the great films about show business. Based on a real woman, Dorothy Davenport Reed, whose husband tragically became a drug addict. He died. And afterwards, she billed herself as Mrs. Wallace Reed.
That's that scene, yeah.
And that's where
Mrs.
That,
Norman Maine.
Yeah, she based her whole career on.
Yeah, I know on, movies. I know
on
movies.
Talking
I like
about,
it.
About that, because he died of a. That became her mission.
Thought that movie was kind of based on Barbara Stanwyck and Frank Fay.
I've heard that.
Am I wrong? I might be wrong. I've heard that. I don't dive deep into those movies, but
I've heard that.
Do you know that relationship also? Where he was like a vaudeville star, and then she became this monster movie star.
Yes.
I don't mean monster. I mean huge.
Yes.
That was the wrong word. It's like she's Boris Karloff.
But a protege. I love those kind of movies anyway.
You do?
Love them or leave them. Love Me or Leave Me, Doris Day, James Cagney, similar.
Mm-hmm. You know. Show businessy kind of thing.
Yeah, she becomes a big star. He's a cripple.
Yeah,
to leave him. So anyway, I interrupted you.
I like being interrupted.
You're talking about the castaways.
It's not the castaways.
In search of the castaways.
Did she listen?
No, I take notes. I just want to point out.
Search of the castaways. And what happened was, you know, it's interesting because I may start crying because my dad passed away when I was a kid. My dad died when I was a kid. Super sad. And so my mom moved back in. We all moved back. There was four kids at that time. We all moved back into our grandparents' house. And then almost like every weekend, we would go to our aunt's house just to give my mom some time to just process thing, not deal with super chatty Wayne Fetterman. and so my Aunt Sylvia dropped us off and took us to, I have an Aunt Sylvia. I know that sounds like a pet character or something, you know. in Maryland. I'll never forget it. There's a great kind of volcano scene that I still like have images of.
See, I always like describe this as the wet cement theory. Things get into your brain, and as I've often said with me, Romeo and Juliet, the music.
That was your first movie?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you know you don't know mine, do you?
No, what is yours?
May I guess?
Yes.
I'm going to guess. Is it a Disney movie?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Did you see me light up when you said Disney movie?
No, but I read, and this might be a wrong, it's like 80% of the people on the planet.
First movie.
I'm going to say, you seem young. Was it animated?
Flatterer. No, it was not.
It's not animated.
Mm-mm.
Is it a Witch Mountain movie?
No, very close, though.
Yeah, let me hear. Go ahead. That was my guess.
Herbie the Love Bug.
Oh, wow.
That's a great
one.
The original?
Yeah.
With Buddy Hackett.
Yeah.
Oh, and Dean Jones, I'm not mistaken.
Yes, Dean Jones.
Yeah.
Big crush on Dean Jones.
See? Interesting. Well, it's interesting that Disney for a while was into these kids' movies that weren't animated.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Hayley Mills sang also in my movie, but... Yeah, that's a great thing. And they remade that, right?
Herbie the Love Bug? Yes, they did.
With who? Who was in that?
Don't feel it was as successful.
I don't.
You don't have to trash it.
You know, though, a weird thing. Just 2 weeks ago, I saw a Herbie the Love Bug drive
by.
I'm
going to take a wild guess. I think Matt Dillon was in Herbie the Love Bug, the remake.
Easy enough to look up. This is the thing. I do... a podcast.
Yes.
It's now kind of on a hiatus. I don't know. But the key to my podcast is we never look anything up. It's just called Human Conversation.
Yes.
We just live in the analog world. Live in the with brains and cells. And that's where our information is.
Yeah. I love that.
I don't know. It's in here somewhere. Yeah, but I'd rather talk to people.
Yeah, we'd
like
rather
say,
just talk. So that was a very... And here's the crazy thing. The first job, acting job I got, not in a commercial, but on camera, was in... a movie called Parent Trap 3, Hawaiian Honeymoon. And who is in it? Haley Mills. She's the mom in this one.
Well,
wow.
How crazy was that? And I had a scene with Haley Mills.
Oh.
And all of us, you know, there was a lot of us, you know, who that was like an early screen crush for a lot of young boys, I would assume, right?
Yes. I mean, she was adorable. Sure. And
what?
And would you say, because, you know, as I said, I feel there is a synchronicity in people's film careers. There's this, you know, you see movies, there's a childlike belief when you first see movies, they seem so real to you.
Yes.
And they really, you know, and then sometimes you find yourself in a career.
I actually never thought they seemed real to me.
Really?
I thought they seemed, this is what I love about movies. I think I feel like they felt as close as I've ever been to dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Which there is a reality in that, but yes. You know, it's just like, oh, I'm lost in this universe, as opposed to this is real.
See,
life.
I thought they were real.
You thought that was real life?
Yeah. When I think the second movie I remember seeing was Phantom of the Opera.
What?
Yeah, because my father, my father would only sleep in the living room.
That could give a kid nightmares.
It did. I walked into the room and
Where they go down and
It was the Lon Chaney one.
Yeah.
And
see it in a movie theater.
I saw it on television, but I walked into the room. My father was asleep. The television was glowing.
Yeah.
And it was like a joke. The guy rips the mask off, you know.
Terrific deformed face.
Yeah. And for years, that was my
nightmare.
So you
never saw the beginning part of that
movie? No.
Well, the beginning is really good because you get to see the acid thrown in his face and the whole, and him having it's really compelling.
Then later on, because where we grew up in Connecticut, we only got one channel, which was CBS, and there was an afternoon movie, and there was a rotation of like three films. It was Phantom of the Opera, The Dirty Dozen,
the Robert Aldrich movie.
Yes, and The Life of Caruso with like
Mario Lanza.
Mario Lanza,
It
was like those three films, you know, and then Abbott and Costello. So Phantom of the Opera became a movie I also just later.
Not Life of Caruso, interesting, because that's the one for me. That's my favorite movie.
No.
Everyone loves that movie.
I know.
Right?
Am I wrong?
We don't care about them if they don't.
Right. I don't talk to anyone unless we can chat about life. Whenever I'm in a bar and I'm talking to a girl, that's the first thing I bring up. Did you happen to see The Life of Caruso? If they don't come back and go, Lanza, I'd be like, of course, let's go. Can I
Mario
get you?
Lanza.
Let me buy you a bullet.
He's
that's
got
a brand. That's a brand.
Off topic, but in funny names.
Yeah.
Keir DeLay's first review, one of my favorite things.
That's the 2001 guy?
Yeah. His first theatrical review on Broadway. Keir DeLay, Gone Tomorrow. It's one of my friends. And the other one is Nunzo. Goodio Natso I can't even say his name right. Nunio Gatso is an Italian. Was not his review was not so goodio. So you had to.
So basically,
cruel.
It's not even funny names. It's just horrible reviews. You remember people when you really break it down. It wasn't like here's a list of funny names. It was like
Keir DeLay Gone Tomorrow. I just think
that's a pretty.
How
good...
do you sort of escape that? So you're. So let's segue into you said your first.
So that was my first movie. But I've always been into movies, and I know this is popcorn talk, right?
Yes.
And
you and I both, and we go see movies together oftentimes. We pretty much agree. I bring up the sore subject? We won't talk about the film, but we do disagree about one film.
What's that?
Begins with a B. Can I say it? Barry Lyndon.
Oh, Barry Lyndon, yes. We can talk about that.
We won't talk about it, but we see movies.
Have you seen Barry Lyndon? Okay. Are you familiar with Stanley Kubrick,
yes,
the director? Well, he's made this. He is considered one of the great directors of all time, which I take issue with. I take issue with. I think he's one of the great photographers of all time.
Great film. Yes.
Film. Like what? Filming. What, yeah. Like what? Filmic. What you see is incredible. But
yes.
But he's my brother, and also my brother, who was also in Search of the Castaways. Mm-hmm.
He was a film editor.
He was a motion picture editor.
Yes. We should have him on.
Yeah, he knows a lot about movies. He's really good. That's his favorite director of all the directors who's ever.
Because there's no editing. Because there's so movies.
They're so long.
Because they're so long. He has very little.
No, he loves. He loves. He loves them. So anyway, So I saw Barry Lyndon when it came out. Didn't like it, but I was like, maybe I'm too young. Maybe I'm not mature enough. Maybe I don't have the world view to enjoy it. So it was out a couple years ago. And yes. Where was it at? The Cinerama Dome?
Cinerama Dome.
Like, new, pristine print. I was like, all right, let me, the mature Wayne, see it.
Yes.
And what happened? I was just as bad as I remembered.
I
think Ryan O'Neal, I can see Ryan O'Neal losing his mind in that movie, trying to play that role.
I love the film.
So we disagree with that. That doesn't mean either one of us is right.
But it was one of the few films we disagreed at, but it was like the lights came up and I said, like, oh, it's incredible right here.
I'm just shaking my head like
it's terrible. You thought it was too contemporary. You thought the casting, Brian O'Neill, was too contemporary.
It's not even about the casting. I just think Kubrick loses his mind in these movies. And some of my favorite movies are I love Paths of Glory.
Yes.
I've seen them all. The Killer's Kiss, The Killing. I've seen the early ones. I've seen, obviously Strangelove's a masterpiece.
Yes.
But let me tell you when the break happened.
Ooh.
Tell us. Spill it.
1968. The summer. Excuse me. It started in April 68.
Yes.
The first weekend of April 68, big thing happens. Martin Luther King gets killed. Remember that?
Yes.
April 4th, if I'm not mistaken. That weekend, Planet of the Apes opens, directed by, I can't think of the guy's name, Franklin.
Oh.
Yeah, I think of it.
Schaffner.
Yeah. What are you saying?
Schaffner?
Yeah, Franklin Schaffner. I love it. Later that year, 2001, A Space Odyssey opens. Remember that?
Yes. I mean, I don't remember.
Everyone loved it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, there was some great image. Back to the photography. Phenomenal imagery. I still don't know what that baby at the end is. I don't know what that monolith is.
Yes.
It's all ambiguous. There's one great scene where the computer attacks the guy. You will admit that's a great scene, right?
I love the film.
You love it.
I love it.
Okay, so again, we're in disagreement, but it's friendly. We're friendly.
Yeah.
So that was a break.
It's not in my top 10.
I thought Planet of the Apes was a better movie than 2001. I know that sounds sacrilegious to movie buffs, and I'm sure there's people right now screaming at their, what would this be, a television?
Yes.
Screaming. Internet. They could be watching it on their cell phone. There's a new Google phone. I don't have it. That's a free plug. right? I'm not talking about the iPhone or the Samsung.
You're not.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah. So that was the break for me. That was the, because my brother was like went nuts over it. And I was like, I actually think Planet of the Apes is like a more entertaining movie. Like it has a beginning, a middle, and end, as opposed to a beginning, a middle, and then
it'd be random thoughts. It'd be fascinating. Of course, it's a shame that Stanley Kubrick is not here to kind of explain.
He doesn't need himself to explain it to me.
To explain these things. But no, as you said, it was like a ball of yarn starts to unravel in The Shining, and then by the time you get to Eyes Wide Shut. I do remember my experience.
Somebody's coming around.
Somebody's
coming around. Live on the air.
I remember seeing Eyes Wide Shut because I'm a member of the Academy, so yes. I get all the Academy movies and invitations.
Can I ask how you got into the Academy? What was the film role?
I write about it in my book. I've
read your book. I don't remember this part.
It's bittersweet. I did the film To Die For.
Right.
And apparently I was about four votes shy of getting a nomination.
You were incredible in that movie, by the way.
Thank you. It's very nice.
Do you remember any of it?
No. I was drugs. No. Of course, I remember it. It was incredible experience, Gus Van Sant.
Right. The ice skating.
Nicole Kidman.
Putting in the Donovan song.
Yes. That was, again, just me haphazard. As I stumble through show business.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, I would play.
Of the Witch.
Yeah. I was getting into the.
I would have recommended Mellow Yellow or Sunshine Superman.
Well, no, Gus came into my room. I had these mixtapes, and
I know. Go ahead, tell your
story. But he had, I had these mixtapes, and he'd come in and listen to different music, and it started. He'd always like to hear what I was listening, and then we were shooting a funeral scene, and he said, "Gee, do you have anything sad? Do you have any sad music?" Yeah. And I remember that I had all this. What I had literally on was playing was The Weight. I remember the band,
Oh, yeah, from upstate New York.
That's what I had. And I said, geez, let me. And then I had Imagine. I said, it's a little cornball, but I have Imagine. Right. And that's what we used. That's what everybody used in the scene. And people were bawling. I mean, that song is universally sad. And then Gus really actually wanted to use that song, couldn't get it. It was too expensive. And they ended up putting, which I thought was a miss, in my personal opinion, Eric Carmen's All By Myself.
Couldn't disagree more. Love that song.
Well, you like the counterintuitiveness of us being sad. I thought it's just in my personal opinion as a stickler. I was there.
You felt like it was too...
little too on the nosy.
Right.
All By Myself.
Yeah.
She's the selfish killer listening.
Oh, okay.
To it. And, but I understand. Imagine,
when I was young, I never needed anyone.
Yeah. That's what,
What's the next line of that song?
And
making love just for fun.
Those days are gone.
Gone, fun, and gone.
Absolutely. Oh my God, the tears I shed over that album.
I don't know why I like that song so much.
I know.
I like the run up. The dun, 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 boom, all by myself.
Yes, that's true. You're right. That's
it is pretty dramatic,
right? Yes, absolutely.
Well, you thought it was too...
Well, again... This is something we've talked about again and again, process. Mm-hmm. When you're on the set shooting something and what it felt like when you were shooting it and you leave the set and you say, wow, that's going to be an incredible scene. I mean, everybody was bawling. It had real significance. We were listening to this thing. We were imagining Matt Dillon was gone. We were listening to Imagine. Everyone's extremely emotional. And then you go to see the movie and you're remembering this really remember that scene that was so intense. What? It's like, and now it's been turned into kind of a comic sort of a thing. So that's always a, as an actor, you have to differentiate your time on set and when you see the final movie.
That's a good thing to know. Can we go back to to your 3 votes short of being nominated for Best Supporting Actor?
Yes, yes.
And then what happens? They call you up and say, good news, bad news.
No, I got a letter. I literally got a letter.
Bad news, good news letter. You're close. You can come in.
I got a letter from the Academy, on very thick, impressive stationery. And addressed to me. I had no idea what it was about. I assumed it was about something having to do with my grandfather, Melvin Douglas.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
He was a 2-time Academy Award winner. And I opened up this letter.
For being there.
And HUD. And it was a letter from Gregory Peck.
Greg Peck. I know him as Greg. Go ahead.
Yes. Inviting me. inviting me into the Academy, and I was just stunned. And then that was sort of followed up with a phone call from Roddy McDowall, who was a friend, and explaining to me that I came very close, and they made this decision to invite me into the Academy, and that's how I got in.
How did you process that information? I mean, how did you feel about it?
Good question. Go ahead.
This is how I processed it. Like everything else, I filled out. There was a thing, because it wasn't free. You had to.
How much? I didn't know.
I didn't either.
Tell us.
We want to know.
Tell us.
I don't know how much.
This is popcorn talk. Let's do this.
I don't know how much.
Are we talking about 5,000? Are we talking 500?
No, I think it's somewhere between 5 and 1,000, you know, say 6 something or 7 something. You know, remember, this is back in 93 or 94, a while ago. But anyway, my
22 years ago.
Again, my initial response getting the letter before I received the phone call from Roddy McDowell was, this is a mistake. This is clearly some sort of a mistake, because I thought, well, what have I done? I haven't done anything. I didn't specifically.
I agree with you. I agree. You have not done anything.
You're ridiculous.
Everyone knows you haven't done anything. What's wrong with her?
I have low self-esteem.
You haven't done anything.
So I signed very quickly before they could change their mind, sent in my
check. Did they take credit cards? How's it work over there?
Well, this was again in the 90s. You sent a check.
You sent a check.
Yes. Okay. And then
did you send it to?
Then Roddy McDowell called me.
Was it to Gregory Peck?
To Greg.
And he said, did you get the receive the letter? And I said, I did. You know about this? And he said, well, you know, you came very close. And that's how, you know. So, but I'm hoping. My grandfather didn't win his first Academy Award till he was 63. So I'm going
to
go.
Got a long way to go,
lady. Got a long way to go. I'm going the Ruth Gordon route.
Right.
You know,
love
she
it.
Was in her 80s when she won.
Yep.
She said, a thing like this can be very encouraging. That's my favorite.
That's a great joke.
That's my favorite acceptance speech in, you know, 81. Yeah, a thing like this can be encouraging. So let's go back to you, because this is something we talk about. It's very interesting. You started out doing small parts in movies, even extra work. You were in the film Black Sunday, the John Frankenheimer.
This is when I was still in Florida. Now, just to give you a
context.
Because I remember we talked about In Search of the Castaways.
Yes.
I lived in Maryland, then moved to the southern part of Florida, a place called, unfortunately, Plantation. That's the name of it. horrible level.
You didn't name it.
Yeah,
it's
name it. Yeah, it was called Plantation. Offensive.
Yes.
Not as bad as my cousin who lived in concentration camp, New Jersey. I'm kidding. That's a joke.
He's funny.
So they shot this movie. That's where I went to high school, South Plantation High School. And then they shot this movie called Black Sunday at the Orange Bowl, and they invited people down to be extras. And all you got was a lunch.
You didn't even get paid?
No. Wow. No. And, but it was just shot, shot that over like a week and a half. I was just there one day.
Yes.
And that was my first extra work. I don't know if you call it work if you only get paid lunch.
Did you take it seriously? Did you show up as professionally as you could?
I didn't know what I was doing.
Let's call
you
it
sat
work.
There and
yes.
We watched a blimp kind of go in, and then it started raining and they sent us home.
So you weren't even anywhere. You weren't.
To tell you the truth, I don't know if I'm in that movie.
So did that begin a journey for you, or was it just a day?
I knew when I was in high school that I wanted to be. This was my goal, to be a stand-up who was a good actor. Mm-hmm. Like,
favorite stand-ups that had become actors?
Well, yeah.
There's quite
a
few.
It was at the time, there was these young comedians who kept getting these sitcoms, like Freddie Prinze and Jimmy Walker, and even Billy Crystal was on Soap.
Yes.
Like, these were all, young comedians. But
what about Michael Keaton? Were you a Michael Keaton fan at all?
Keaton was a little later than that. A little later than when I was...
He's a big fan of his.
Of course. You're younger than I am. I get it. You don't have to throw it up in my face. I get it. I have a different frame of reference
than
I did.
But he never made it on television. He used to... My awareness of him was he would go on the old Mike Douglas show, and that was one of my favorite things in the universe. Mm. They would have a co-host for an entire week.
Out of Philadelphia.
Yeah. And you'd see the person really just acting normally in a variety. If there was a cooking segment...
Yeah, they did it.
They did the cooking,
I remember when John Lennon co-hosted
Philadelphia. Oh, my gosh.
It's incredible.
Yes.
He brings on Chuck Berry, like all the... bands he like, you know, the musicians he likes, and it brings on obviously his wife.
He brought on Barbara Loden, who is the writer director of the film that I've been staunchly a supporter of, called Wanda, which we showed last year on Turner Classic Movies, an independent film. Mm-hmm. She wrote it, directed it, and starred in it. And he and Yoko Ono saw the film and were big proponents of her, so he brought her on. In addition to Chuck Berry. So you're playing these. This is something.
I became. And then I went to New York University and studied with the famous Stella Adler.
Yes.
Got into that acting program.
And Stella, tell people who some of the people, some of her students.
Her most famous student, hands down, everyone knows him, this guy Bernie Temelman. Bernie Temelman. It's Marlon Brando.
Yes.
That was her guy. But I'm going to just drill down a little bit because some people might find this interesting. A lot of people think of the method as this thing that Lee Strasberg created, which is kind of not exactly true. It's like the group theater.
Yes, with Harold Clurman.
Harold Clurman, who I also took classes with.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They were married.
And they were divorced at that time. Yeah. Yeah.
Estelle Adler and Harold Clurman.
Yeah, he created the group theater, which had obviously Lee Strasberg, Stella Adler, Ilya Kazan, and their famous
Lou Adler. Sorry to interrupt.
No, I don't know if Lou was part of the group.
He wasn't?
I thought he was a bigger star. Maybe. Because I read that book, The Fervent Years.
The Fervent Years,
but there was a playwright by the name of Clifford Odets.
Who I'm obsessed with.
You are. Tell me why.
Listen, I went to the Neighborhood Playhouse. Mm-hmm. Sanford Meisner was my teacher. You know, we cut our teeth on the play Waiting for Lefty. Mm-hmm. That was pretty much, you know, that was considered the Bible for Sanford Meisner. And this was 1984, you know. I remember putting on a production of Waiting for Lefty, and at the end, I mean, the guy that got cast, and, you know, they were still comparing, like, the original, and you're playing the Ilya Kazan role.
Right.
And
the taxi.
And it ends
strike.
In the end with Strike, and I'm stuck here like a flivver in the snow. That's what I always remember, which I guess was some sort of car. But, keep going. The group theater.
So anyway, so out of that, but that all came out of this natural kind of what they call naturalistic acting, which to me is still slightly mannered. I'll say it.
Interesting.
I do believe that. But it sort of has to be out of this guy Stanislavski, who was the head of the Moscow Arts Theater.
Exactly. And I'm going to interject one more time. You know who was in that group? Maria Ospenskaya. Was part of the Stanislavski, Maria Ospenskaya.
In Russia.
Yes.
Okay.
Who we think of as all the, you know, the she would be in these, I don't know, the Dracula movies. I think she was always playing like
How do you pronounce, say her name again?
Maria Ospenskaya. And later on, she became a character actress and was also an acting coach.
She was.
For many people. And I'm going to mention one more person, very obscure, Richard Boleskowski.
Jeez.
Who wrote a book called, which is a fantastic book, Six Lessons on Acting. And he directed my grandfather in a movie called Theodora Goes Wild. So they're part of that original troika, would we call it, of the Stanislavski method in Russia.
In Russia?
Wow.
Yes.
Right.
And come to America, and then...
They come, but Stanislavski never steps foot in America.
No.
But he does spend some time with my teacher, Stella Adler.
And this becomes revolutionary.
And also creates a rift
between
what Strasberg is teaching and what Adler's teaching. Am I correct?
Exactly.
And I'm sure they still talk about it in New York, like at that time.
Well, listen, again, when I studied with Sanford Meisner, it was like the tablets... Here's what happened.
It is.
Stella went to Moscow. You know, like
went to France. Actually, it was France. They met in France. Yeah,
it was like these grudges. And this is where we broke off. And this is the Neighborhood Playhouse thinks this.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Actors Studio thinks that. And there's tremendous rivalry.
It was stupid.
And then on the periphery of that was Stella Adler and Uta Agen, who in a sense developed. You know, their own kind of methods.
No question. So that's how this all came about. So I think of myself as there's Stanislavski, Adler, Fetterman. I'm the third in the line, the great acting.
I love
professors.
I love
they
it.
I haven't decided to teach an acting class.
Well, was
so
there
that's so that's what I learned. So I studied with Stella Adler.
Yes,
and.
She's had many great students, aside from Brando, Warren Beatty.
Besides you.
besides Wayne Fetterman and his great work on Dear John.
Since we're getting a little off topic with acting, I just want to differentiate very quickly some extremely famous actor studio actors include Harvey Keitel, Christopher Walken, Shelley Winters.
Oh, Pacino.
Joanne Woodward, Al Pacino. No, and then now I'm going to say some very famous Sanford Meisner actors and see if you can spot a kind of a difference. Diane Keaton, Robert Duvall, Jeff Goldblum, Lee Grant. You see any kind of, you feel any kind of difference? I mean, my preference.
I feel like you're saying their names a little slower. So it seems like they're more important. And obviously your preference. Well, we've talked about this before.
It's the internal, because I
as opposed to the reactive.
Yes, yeah. it's the internal, preparation versus Sanford Meisner's. It's the external. Mm-hmm. And to me, the most obvious example is Jeff Goldblum. Oh, look at you! What are you? Oh, nice. That's very.
No question.
I
feel like I have that as well.
Yes,
I'm way more external than internal.
I thought
inside. Needless to say, empty, right?
I didn't.
You just met me.
Yeah, that's what I can see.
Yeah.
I remember first learning the actor studio, and I didn't like it because it was very much about you're cold, you're so cold, and I'm like,
the coffee cup. You remember that?
Yeah, I would my mind would drift, and I'd want to be funny, and I found it very constraining. And then when I went with Sanford Meisner, that was the key. For me, I was like, wait a minute, it's not about me. It's all about them.
Yeah.
That I can do all day long.
Yeah.
I can, and that to me was the secret weapon that, it has nothing to do with me. It's like, it's all about, it's all about the other person.
No, I know it's a little off topic, but I do think it's interesting because a lot of acting came out of
all acting,
all of that. But can I say something just real quickly about those pre-method actors, pre-1950 actors, or 47 or whatever.
Can't wait, because can't wait.
Because I know a lot of people think they're old-fashioned and they're corny and they're mannered and they're, presentational.
Yes.
And because a lot of them came from the stage, and there is some of that. There's no doubt about it.
Yes.
But I also think in every generation there's great acting, every generation of film, even silent movies.
Of course.
In silent.
I agree.
Because there was a movie with your granddad.
Yes.
That I saw called Counselor at Law.
Yes.
With John Barrymore, who's literally the poster child of
presentational
yes. melodramatic acting.
Yes.
But in that movie, and there were some presentational, like, hey, John, take it down a notch moments in it, right?
Yes.
But there was also some very grounded, internal, like in his eyes, under his breath acting that was just breathtaking. So I just feel like at every step there's great acting, even though you may not connect with it because A, the movie's in black and white. B, the dialogue might not have the idioms that you're familiar with today, so it sounds like, well, why are people talking like this?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's my take. What's your counterpoint?
Well, I would say that another actor in that genre who I believe works is Edward G. Robinson. Came out of the early actor that everybody thought was a genius was Paul Muni.
Right.
So he came out of something which was called the Yiddish Theater, which I don't know too much about.
Well, the Adlers were big in the Yiddish Theater.
They were.
Stella's dad was the king. Yeah.
So I wonder, again, if that offers some influence. But when you think of some of the Edward G. Robinson performances, they're slightly...
cornball-y?
Well, as you said, I'm going to pick up my pipe now, and I'm going to, Frederick March.
Yeah.
But sometimes, when used correctly, I find it to be, I find it to really, to really work. But in terms of that that kind of presentational style, I have found it challenging sometimes. I've worked with some actor studio actors that are so involved with what they are doing. Sanford Meisner used to call this the bull in the china shop dilemma, meaning they're so focused on what they are doing that you find yourself not you've got to find some way in, because they're not even kind of taking you in. And I with some of the dug in Actor Studio actors, I've found it to be a challenge. I've preferred much more the other types of actors. You know, Richard Dreyfuss comes from, you know, he loved Spencer Tracy. That was his.
Right. Yes, Tracy's a perfect example.
But he was a combination, I think, of, again, that doesn't quite get credit.
Do you remember Frank Langella?
Of course. Love Frank Langella.
Frank Langella came to New York University, talked to us young students. And, of course, it came up, this great divide. What do you think?
Yes.
And this is what he said, and this is something I believe. He goes, look, if you have to cry in a scene and you need to think about your dead dog and that makes you cry, that has nothing to do with this scene.
Yes.
And that makes you cry and you cry, good. If there's, if you have to create an imaginative world where this actress is this person and you really work on that and that makes you cry, good. He goes, and if you have to turn around, cut an onion, come back, and then look and you're crying, goes, that's good also. He goes, it's all about making the audience believe that you believe it.
Interesting.
I thought that was very.
See, Meisner, Sanford Meisner was, you'd go home on the weekend and we just want to slit your wrists if you didn't cry, really, if you, there wasn't some
yeah,
real.
Yeah, but he was saying that it's.
I know. It's all, you know, right. It's all kind of different. I had an interesting experience where all of my early acting was in musical theater.
That's automatically sort of presentational and hyper-realistic.
So we
try to remember. This is from The Fantastics. I'm just saying that.
Now, we don't have too much time left.
Okay, how much time do
we have? We have more than that, says.
Okay, good.
3 minutes left.
No, we don't. No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, good. We can keep talking.
We're going to ignore that for now.
Because I want to get to...
me acting in movies, my little roles.
Well, yeah, because I think that, again, people starting out that have... I believe it is the hardest thing in the world to come in and you've got like two lines. You know, you're in your trailer and you're like, I love ice cream.
It really lasts.
Yeah, it really lasts. As I was
fired
for not saying one line correctly. My line was, it really lasts. Worst line in show business.
That is hard. Yeah. That is hard to say. Really lasts.
Yeah. I followed.
That's hard.
I was cast in a commercial, really excited, and the girl, and they were like, lined us up, and they said, all right, your line is, it's pink. And next girl, your line is, it's juicy. Your line is, it really lasts. And it was like.
Was it a gum commercial?
Yeah, it was Trident sugar-free gum. So
I
put that together.
You're so intuitive. Put that together.
It's pink. It's juicy. It really lasts. I was like Charlie Brown, you know.
Womp, womp.
And I was fired. I got fired. But so tell us about, you have a name for this.
This is the thing. I've been in these movies that we listed earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Legally Blonde.
Yes.
50 First Dates. Yep. Step Brothers. 40-Year-Old Virgin. Yes. Knocked Up. All of these movies have something in common. I'm in one scene, and you never see me again. Mainly because my acting is so good.
Such an impact you make.
That people wouldn't be able to enjoy a movie if they saw me more than
pulling
that.
Pulling focus.
It's just too, it's like trying to watch the sun. You just can't do it.
Absolutely.
You have to look at it through a box with a hole. You don't even look at it without. So that's how good my acting is.
Yes.
And... So I call it the Fetterman and Out, where like you see me, and then you don't see me. I'm done with the whole thing. So that's
your claim to fame.
And I have a new one coming out in this movie called The House.
Yes.
With Will Ferrell.
Ah.
Amy Poehler.
Yes. Big names.
Yeah. And my scene is with them, and again, I play a like a crap stealer or a. Yeah, scrap stealer in Vegas. One scene, take all their money, done.
Now, how do you not feel intimidated, or do you? What's your approach? You come in for one day. I find this to be the hardest thing. You come in, the rhythm has been established.
To tell you the truth, to me it's harder to not get cast.
That's the hard part?
No. I feel like that's the hardest thing in show business is dealing with rejection. Mm-hmm. So, like, when I get these jobs, I'm like, it doesn't seem hard at all to me. It's just like, oh.
Let me focus. Yeah.
I know what I have to do. It's usually something Fetterman-esque, kind of funny.
And what is a Fetterman-esque quality?
Would just be, well, I mean, not always.
Skeptical?
No, bemused.
Yeah.
Bemused, iconoclastic. I don't know. It was just like, just something where I play off of somebody.
I cast you in Easy to Assemble because I thought you had an everyman quality.
Thank you.
I mean, as a man, I could see
as
you.
A man, I could be an every?
No, and, you know, as a, I cast him as a manager of a rival store, a rival IKEA in Carson. That never got the showbiz sparkle of Burbank.
Now
he's in Burbank.
And he's in and his element.
And he's like, yes, I knew this world existed. And because I love movies about people with, like, you know, big dreams who have small lives and small jobs. I'm always fascinated by the inner dreams. Mm-hmm. And this idea of like, yes, I knew this world existed, and now how do I stay here and ingratiate myself so I don't have to go back to Carson? So I do like to think about every.
Thank you. I don't know. I don't really think about what I just sort of. To tell you the truth, we talked about it. I hate to bring it back, but
no.
If I had it to do over again, mm-hmm. I think I would have studied with Sanford Meisner as opposed to Stella Adler
because.
For the very reasons Ileana Douglas was just saying, that I'm very much a believer in reactive acting mm-hmm. as opposed to bringing something
yes.
and hoping it connects with what they're bringing. And like
tough.
And it's also just as a stand-up comedian, like I'm in a reactive mode also to the audience. So I just like to be – it helps me be in it. And also, if I had to say I had a weakness as an actor – and this is going to be self-revelatory, is I feel like sometimes you get self-conscious, which is killer. That's like the worst thing you can do. And I think Sanford, you can't be doing it and be self-conscious.
That's why I thought it was the greatest thing ever. Because, again, a movie is, you know, you're just about to do something. Oh, wait, hold. Can we fix her hair? Can we touch her sweater? You know, you got people touching you.
It's tricky.
You hear people saying, are we going to be able to do this for lunch? You know,
Well, the hardest is, and this just happened for another Fetterman and Out in a movie called Sandy, which is an Adam Sandler Netflix movie. But it was the last shot of the day. It was behind schedule.
Dreaded.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. So that was
not fun.
No.
I mean, it was no time to play, no time to kind of discover anything. It was just, let's get it.
Yeah.
Let's go.
And you feel ill.
Like I didn't do anything. I was here three hours ago.
Am I being punished?
Yeah, so you am I being rushed?
You know, you come in and there's a pressure. You're in one scene or, you know, doing a cameo. I mean, I would say that, again, I feel a certain responsibility when you have one scene.
Oh, yeah.
Because usually they've cast you for to give it some lift that is not there. That's how I get, you know,
I give it a lift.
Like, yeah.
I'm a lifter.
Well, I feel that sometimes, again, people are like, what are we going to do with this thing? We got this...
Bring in Fetterman?
Information. What if we put in somebody fun and they'll, you know...
And every man who's fun?
Yes. Lift it
up. I put that on my IMDb page.
Now, did you chat... Like, do you chat up the stars? Oh, God. You are... I'm thinking of... Really?
Why?
No, I feel like...
That's all I would be doing.
I know this goes back to In Search of the Castaways. I bring this full circle.
Of course it does.
I'm in show business. I do, you know, I'm on these TV shows and stuff. To me, the pinnacle of show business is movies. Mm-hmm. Popcorn Talk.
Yes.
I feel like there's nothing you... Broadway, there's nothing you can do. World Tour, nothing you can do in show business more than... Because there's a historical legacy to it. Mm-hmm. And so... Like, when I'm on the set, I'm like, all right, this is a movie. Let's get this right.
Yes.
Not get this right, or just try to do the best I can without, like, I'm trying to get Amy Poehler to laugh in between takes and stuff. Like, I'm not really concentrating on any of that
because
stuff.
It interrupts that process, do you think?
I just... This is... It kind of goes back to auditioning. This is like, for a long time, I would audition and work the room before I auditioned.
Right.
Excuse me. And get laughs and stuff like that, and thinking that would make them hire me. Right. And a lot of times it didn't.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I have to do what's on the paper.
Yeah.
This is really why I'm here.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny. I can be self-deprecating and make fun of what, you know, this moment. But, like, I got to make this good.
Right.
So that's what that's 90% of it. And then, yeah, so I'm not really. So what do? You schmooze up the stars?
Well, usually.
Is that your move?
Yes. I'm here every day.
But again, you have a different thing. I'm there one day.
Oh, no. When I auditioned many, many years ago, they said, all right, here. It's like what it's like getting the nuclear code. I'm going to go back to 1986 New York City.
Yeah.
Or 87 or something, you know. You're going to audition for Woody Allen, you know, and you come in. And I was like, I had one goal in mind. That goal was not to get in the movie. That goal was to talk about my knowledge of Bob Hope with Woody Allen. Like, that was it. I mean, that's how but I'm a nut. I was like, and they were like, no, you're going to go in, you're going to do the words, and you're going to leave. Do not talk to Woody Allen. Do not look at Woody Allen. Mm-hmm. I was like, absolutely. I was like, hey, you know, Bob Hope, you know, and he reacted.
Right.
And, oh yeah, absolutely. You know, so I do. I'm a schmoozer in that way.
Wayne, you've got a CD there on the.
Well, yes. This is just.
What is it?
Well, this is.
Tell us about your work.
It's my comedy CD. This came out last year. It's called The Chronicles of Fetterman.
I love it.
And it's three decades of stand-up, starting from 1984.
Wow.
Yeah, and made it on. Four top 10 lists of best comedy CD of the year last year.
So. That's fantastic.
Yeah. If you're interested in me and you want to buy something.
I'm interested in you.
Why would we not be interested?
I don't know. It's enough about this.
Okay.
Enough about this. This isn't really about movies.
There's so much more I want to get to.
I know. We got to wrap ridiculous. This up. Now I'm taking over your host. We have to wrap this up. Listen, it's been fun to have you.
No, I want to end with a contrast and compare Larry Sanders Show versus Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, fantastic.
I thought we were just talking about movies because those are
not
TV.
I'm just curious just because in terms of the how they've changed. I both feel they have influentially changed network television in different ways, especially the Larry Sanders Show, but also Curb Your Enthusiasm in terms of a kind of the.
Well, wouldn't you say Curb is a direct descendant of Larry Sanders?
Yes, but even
do you
more.
Agree with that?
I do,
but with less stakes.
I wish I had.
What I loved about Larry Sanders was, I'm going to answer my own question, but I was curious what you think is the sweet spot of the pathos and the comedy.
They examine that way more than they do on Curb.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no question.
Curb is just the humiliate, you know, the kind of the humiliation and the,
Right, and no good deed going unpunished.
Yeah.
That's it, and his own worldview. For me, comedically, Curb Your Enthusiasm was a little easier for me to do because I got to write every line I said.
Yes.
Every line I said. So it was literally a piece of paper. He needs to, you know, the wire.
Yes.
He's going to break your glasses. Whatever the scenes were.
Yes.
So that makes it, again, we talked about my weakness, which is becoming self-conscious. Like, if I don't have to even think about what I'm going to say,
yes.
It's great. So that, I think, comedically... But the Larry Sanders Show, I have a real moment. It's about him not knowing my kids and me wanting to connect with them and being this. So it's, that was a little more.
It's a great character because that's such a phenomenon, again, of a relationship between somebody that is uber successful, they don't have to be in show business,
right.
And somebody that is not as successful.
And also, I don't know if you know this about Gary, but he had a brother who died when he was a kid that he idolized. And so whose name is Barry. And so this was the first time there his character had a brother on the show. So I felt like there was extra weight to
and
begin
responsibility.
With.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to begin with. So I was, you know.
Well, two interesting parts. Now, next time, Wayne Fetterman, unfortunately, this must come to an end. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about film, music in film, because you're a big expert in music and film.
Yeah, we really
today we just sort of covered
music.
Comedy.
No,
are you on Twitter, website?
Yes, can people find you?
How can people find you?
Go to the sleeper cell? No.
Go? I'm off the grid. I'm at Fetterman.
Yes.
My website's WayneFetterman.com, the classic.
Lucky you.
Not even the classic is part of it, just WayneFetterman.com. And those are the best ways to get in. I'm on Instagram, but barely.
Okay.
Yes.
I would say mini Instagram. No mini. Snapchat. Cannot Snapchat.
We're not gonna.
No. Don't Vine me.
Periscope.
Don't Vine. I don't Periscope.
Periscope seems to be.
I know. I try to. This is the thing. I try not to be looking at a screen too much in my life.
Yeah.
It's hard.
It is.
It's hard in this day and age.
It's really
But that's
hard
how to. You would get in touch with me. And,
we're going to find you.
And you can go on iTunes if you want to get.
iTunes and get your.
Or Amazon. They sell the actual.
Very funny.
A lot of kids, they don't even know what a CD is.
What is a CD?
Yeah.
And you're on YouTube. If they want to check you out, Bantering with Bob Hope.
I've had a lot. Lots happened in my
career. That is good.
Lots happened in my career.
So many interesting things.
We definitely need to have you come back please. We would love to.
We'd love to have you back.
Also, you can buy Ileana's book out now
in
paperback.
That's right.
I Blame Dennis Hopper on Amazon. It's also in bookstores. It's a great read. Also, look at our Facebook page and the website for the show, which is ileanaspodcast.com.
That is right, and I just would like to say, as I always do, everybody's life is a movie with a beginning.
Everyone's
life is a movie with a beginning, a middle, and an end. This is sadly our end. Thank you, Tamara. Thank you, Wayne Fetterman, and see you at the movies.
You're welcome.
See you next time.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.